This is KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. And I want to introduce you to a new program that we're introducing here on KKCR in conjunction with Story for All and Angela Zussman. It's called Talk Story Radio Kauai. And we're going to start that now, taking the place of the Kanakapila for Friday. It's just going to be on the last Friday of every month. Thank you to Sandy Swift, Tita Swift, who did so many years of programming here on KKCR. And I want to honor her legacy and tell stories about Kauai Island. And we'll be doing this the last Friday of every month. But for now, Talk Story Radio Kauai is made possible by KKCR's sustaining members in partnership with Kauai Marine and Mower, the Swell Shave Ice, and Kauai Mold Removal. And now I'd like to introduce Angela. Are you with me, Angela?
I'm here. Thanks so much, Annie.
Oh, I'm so glad. Thank you for sharing your stories with us. And tell me a little bit about your project. First, I want to mention that it's Story for All Land Stories, Farming and Culture, Farming and Kauai Culture, and how rich that is. And I'm happy to present that during our typical Hawaiian music time here on KKCR, because I think it's valuable programming, valuable messaging for us. So tell us a little bit about your project.
Right on. So Story for All is a nonprofit organization that does oral history projects that lift up community stories and present them to an audience to provoke thought, right? And to help people think about what are the traditions, how am I different, how am I the same, and really get people thinking a little bit more deeply about what's happening around them and about their connection to history. So our project, Land Stories, Farming and Kauai Culture, is based here in Kauai, and it's stories of people who've been managing the land and farming on the south side of Kauai. I was totally inspired by a friend of mine who's a farmer on the south side who is trying to do some work to rejuvenate the soil. And it made me think about what's the history of this land? How has the land been used and cared for generations? You know, we typically hear a lot of stories about the plantations, which is a really important part of Kauai history. And there's so much more that's happened before the plantations, during the plantation era, and since then. So Land Stories was an attempt to lift up some of those stories and share them with a wider audience.
I love this project because it's so relevant for what we're dealing with today. And it speaks to management practices, how we can do it better, and how we can do it honoring a legacy as well. I also really enjoy the way that your intention is to bring healing through the stories. How did that idea come about?
Yeah, thank you so much. I mean, that's really the purpose of Story for All, is to promote healing and understanding. And there's a lot about storytelling that's actually very healing. There's a lot of really interesting research about the healing powers of storytelling. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's something that we can talk more about in the future. But let's just, you know, summarize it to say that humans are hardwired to share stories. This is the way that we have always communicated all through time. And most cultures have an oral tradition of storytelling where wisdom and history is passed from generation to generation. So there's that cultural preservation piece, but it also is very, very healing, not only to tell stories, but to be heard, to be listened to. And for the listeners, there's often the transformation that can happen when they receive somebody's story. It literally becomes their own. So there's some pretty fascinating neuroscience behind that. But there is a real alchemy that occurs when we tell and listen to one another's stories. So it's a very sacred space. It's a space where healing can happen. And that's the type of storytelling that we're interested in mainly at Story for All.
Thank you so much for doing that work, too. And your background is in oral history, right? I saw that you've written a book on guiding young people in sort of drawing out the stories from older generations. How did you, what inspired you to go in that route with your life, life's work? Sorry, that's a deep question. It's kind of early, sorry.
It is. Yeah, no, it's all good. It's not too early for a deep question. You know, I'm just naturally very curious. You know, mm-hmm. I was always that person asking questions anyway. As a young person, you know, I would be the one that, you know, kids would come talk to about their problems and so forth. And I was always asking these deep questions. It's just kind of part of who I am. Uh-huh. I'm very interested in people's stories. And I actually spent many years traveling the world collecting stories from people from all walks of life. And I feel like this was my great education. So since then, I've really tried to think about, you know, how can I help other people tell their stories and how can I help create spaces for people to listen and receive these stories? Because, again, both pieces of storytelling are so healing and so powerful, the telling and the listening. So that's what inspired me to found Story for All. I'm especially interested in lifting up stories from people in communities that have been silenced or marginalized. Mm-hmm. I think that those are even more important stories to document and tell. And also really looking at, you know, again, how storytelling can help us find points of connection with one another. Sometimes we feel so different from other people, or we think that, oh, I'm not like them at all. You know, I disagree with everything. I think our society is increasingly polarized. And the truth is, what I found is that we're all actually incredibly similar, that there are many, many points of connection that we all share. And through storytelling, we can find those points of connection. So I'm especially interested in intergenerational oral history, back to your question, because we've in some ways lost the tradition of elders passing on history and wisdom to the younger generation. That's been a part of human culture for as long as humans have been humans, and it's not as much part of our culture these days. And, you know, many young people don't have as much connection with their older generations in their own family or otherwise, and the same is true of our elders. Many of them are cut off from the younger generations, and we can actually see that this is creating rifts in society. So in our own small, tiny way, we'd like to think about how can we bring the youth and the elders together? How can we recreate that most human act of passing on wisdom and history to the younger generations so that the youngers become the holders of this legacy, and so that the elders are able to contribute their knowledge and their wisdom, which, of course, is very healing and empowering to them.
Thank you so much for that, too. I was always the kid with my nose in a book and hanging out with my grandparents and all of that. And I'm still, I'm kind of still that person hanging out with old people and nose in the book. One of the best things that ever happened to me is that now my book can be on my phone and I can take it everywhere. So I'm a big believer in stories and storytelling and asking people questions and where have they come from and where should we go based on that wisdom?
And a lot of people are cut off from their own personal history. Like, a lot of people don't even know much about their family history.
It's true.
That was one of the first projects I did, was trying to dig into my own family's history. And it's enriched my life so much. It's enriched my family so much, what I'm able to share with my children. And it's definitely contributed to my sense of purpose. So any direction we go when we talk about storytelling, it can be so deep and so rich. And I just feel grateful to be able to spend my life doing this work that is so meaningful to me and totally fascinating.
I love it. And I love that KKCR can get these things on the air and we can make them accessible to a wider audience. Like, that's definitely something that KKCR loves to do and wants to do more of. And I'm happy that we can share your stories on the air today.
Awesome. Us too.
Yeah. We've got like a worldwide reach. So we're on KKCR.org and we have a free app that you can put on your phone. So all of our listeners, you can take us with you everywhere. So we're going to start with the interview number 3 in the Farming and Kauai Culture series that you have. And how would you like to introduce this interview?
So I'm really excited to get to share this. I'm so grateful to KKCR.org, all the work that you do, and for providing a platform for stories like this and programming. You've got a whole bunch of great programming on this radio show,
and
I'm
so
grateful about what you're doing to make it accessible to people, not just on Kauai, but around the world. So thank you. Really, it's incredible service that you offer. So yay, thank you to you.
Absolutely.
Really excited to share this interview with you. So this interview that we'll be starting the series off with today is an interview with Rupert Rowe. And Rupert is Native Hawaiian. He's the po'o, or the president, of Kane Oluma, which is a nonprofit organization tasked with overseeing the restoration of Kane Oluma Heiau and the ancient Hawaiian village that's there on that land in Poipu. So Rupert shares stories of Kane Oluma and also some of these kind of thorny land management issues that we've alluded to and some of the deep spiritual sort of unseen events and activities that take place on the sacred lands of the South Shore in the Poipu area. It's kind of known worldwide as a tourist destination, but it is so much more. And Uncle Rupert will get into some of that within this interview. And if I can, I'd also like to share the website for Kane Oluma, which is also a nonprofit organization which is restoring the sacred site, which is at kaneoluma.org.
Kaneoluma.org. And I wonder if you can spell that for the listeners.
Yeah, okay, I'll go slow. So Kane Oluma is one word, KaneIoluma.org. One
awesome.
More time, KaneIoluma.org.
Fantastic. So to learn more about Kane Oluma Heiau and the work that they're doing there, you can visit kaneoluma.org. If you need that website one more time, you can give us a call in a few minutes at KKCR at 826-7771. Should we play it?
I think we should, yes. And as Uncle Rupert says, when you care for a cultural site, you must learn to ask the people of the past to open the door for you to the future. So we're going to ask for blessings and thank Uncle Rupert for opening the door both to the past and the future through this interview.
Thank you so much. And again, we've been speaking with Angela from Story for All, and we're presenting our first program, Land Stories, Farming and Kauai Culture. And this is Uncle Rupert Rowe at Kane Oluma Heiau. Thanks, Angela.
Thanks.
Ooh, gotta turn it on.
So here we are. It's, I think, March 11th.
Yep.
Forgot to say that before. March 11th, 2023. I'm here with Uncle Rupert, Rupert Rowe. Rupert, would you mind to please say and spell your name for us?
It's Rupert Rowe. It's R-U-P-E-R-T-R-O-W-E.
Thank you again so much for your time today. Can you start by telling us what is your connection to this land here?
My connection to the land is when Billy called me and asked me to help him with what he was doing on this project, because they came to a standstill with the state. But the state wanted to charge Billy for doing illegal cleaning on a culture site. So when you do the culture site, you must learn to ask the people of the past to open the door for you to the future, because you malama in the aina and you bring it back life to the aina. So that's how I got involved with Billy.
And how did he know to come to you?
Well, I just retired from the fire department back in 1997. And, well, Billy knows the history of my grandfather, and his grandfather was the best of friends. So how we came to be the best of friends, in 1947, the United Nations sent delegates to Hawaii to find out how many pure Native Hawaiians were living back then. But in 1949, my tutu sent me to Honolulu was to learn the Western way, because he seen the future on the changes that was gonna take place. So when I, at the beginning of my life, I went to Honolulu on the Inter-Island Ferry during the war. And when we landed in Honolulu Harbor, you had to travel at night because everything was blacked out. So when we landed there, my mother was getting her signs to give birth. So they took her to Kapilani Hospital, and I was born over there, riding the ship to Honolulu. So anyway, after staying there a couple of years, I came back home. But when I came back home, that's when my tutu was very disturbed, because they were trying to make Hawaii become the 49th state back in 1949. So that's why my tutu would send me away to learn the Western way. So when you go away at that young age, you really is a young person who really didn't understand the political arena of what would take place in Hawaii. So after being in Honolulu, I ended up in the palace, because Hawaiian homes, and my mother was a janitor for the territorial judiciary system. So I ended up living there and understanding the changes that was taking place throughout Hawaii. And then I came back home every summer. I came home. And when I was home, the native people used to do their funeral services in the house. So I learned about the character of the person from the kapuna who brought you to look in the maka, and you can see the soul of the person. By seeing the soul, then you can become, understand the character, because your soul will describe your character. I learned all of that at a very young age, but I didn't practice what I learned. Because there's more about life that you have to give to do the type of work that my grandfather wanted me to do. And it wasn't in my protocol back then. But he also said, when you reach his age, look at back at your legacy in your life and see if you did what you needed to do to be remembered of how you present your culture. So that's how that mentality stayed in my mind until I I came back and understood what was going on. So I told him that I would support him. By supporting him, you have to be a we. And so when you do a culture site, you always have to ask to Malama the Aina from those that once lived there, and they'll come to your aid. So I came to Billy's aid, and then we ended up getting the county, the hotel industry, the community, and the condominiums all to meet, and we finally got an understanding on what we was doing. But we really never organized until 2010 on a 501c. But on our journey back then, this complex, it's very unique because it has different features in there. There's taro patches, fish pond, there's an arena, there's a tower that the kahunas would lie down and look at the stars above. And then in the arena on the clear night, they used to fill it up with water. And the water would be a mirror that reflects the stars above. You don't have to lie down and look up. You just look down. You can see the stars moving as the time goes by. And it was very interesting. And then I told Billy, let's do it. But the unique part about this whole thing, you could not come in here because of the cactus. So the cactus was really a barrier that kept us silent for 10 years. So I burned all the rubbish in there. I never took nothing out. So when you burn the rubbish, you must take the ashes and then plant it where you're going to plant a tree or a plant, any type of plant. On the bottom, you throw the ashes. And then you fill them up, and then you have potassium for the plant. Yeah.
You mentioned that on a you would fill the pond with water.
Yeah.
So that it was still to reflect the stars. Why was this done? What was the purpose of looking at the stars?
Well, this was a pretty interesting sight because of the tower. I can't tell you the name of the tower. But the kahuna would lie down in there and look at the stars as it goes by. And you can, whatever they were searching, they knew where to put this tower and how the stars move by. But you can do the same thing by looking into the water because it becomes a mirror that reflects the stars.
And the knowledge of the stars was used for planting or navigation, or was it to, you know,
the culture believes that everything you do is in the moon, the phases of the moon. It's not in the phase of the sun, it is in the phase of the moon. The moon will tell you when to fish, when to plant, when to do ceremonial services and all of that. So the culture is built around the moon.
Oh, amazing. tell me more about this land, that this Heian is here, but, you know, hundreds of years ago, what was happening here? Who was here? How many people? What were they doing?
Well, it was just an ancient Hawaiian village that was very big because of the area it was. It was a very interesting part of the island because it always... It's sunny on this side of the island. It's not like Waimea or Wailua or Hanalei. So this island on this side is very agriculture, significance to the culture.
And what did they grow? And talk to me a little bit about that system.
Okay. In the Hawaiian culture, it's based on watery. So whatever fruits you have or vegetables you have or fish you have, you would meet at the boundary of the Ahokua and you would do your trading. So it was very unique on how they communicated and how they distributed the food among themselves. Very unique.
And what is the benefits of a barter system? We know the plantations came in and, you know, changed the whole system. So what was the benefit, perhaps, or challenges of the preceding system?
Let's say you live and you only can catch fish, but you can't grow vegetables. It would be in your interest to trade the fish for the vegetables. You know, that's how it was. You trade whatever the body can take in as a source of energy.
And so the plantations came and they were granted land. What happened then?
Well, the word granted and lease is two different words. They were leasing the land. They were not granted the land. So in your definition of grant, what I just said earlier, after the overthrow of the kingdom, they never returned the land. So they kept the land and it became a problem that we face today. Like I said earlier, the group that was here, that this is the only place that you have a warrant deed, not a title. The title is something that is exchanged between two governments, and in Hawaii, land was never exchanged with America because you didn't want to give up your land for somebody else to move here and become you. That's the interesting part about the whole thing.
And you spoke earlier about the warriors, that this was a place of warriors, Kauai, this part of Kauai. So can you speak more about the warrior culture that was here?
Well, you had the main chiefs used to live in Waimea and Wailu. But this was the armies that were back then in this area because of the weather and the resource that was here. Each Ahopoa has different types of resource, obviously, natural materials. So, you know, like salt and everything, not every place you can make salt. You know, you cannot make salt up Kalaheo because it's not built to make salt up there. So you have to go along the shoreline. Salt was a very important commodity for the Kanaka Mauli.
And you spoke before about the Sheraton, the portal for the demigods. Can you, as if, you know, people watching this won't have heard that before, but that really intrigued me. Can you speak more about the significance of that area there?
Okay, so the porthole is the way that the secondary gods, not the primary gods, which were four, Lono, Kanaloa, Kani, and I forgot the other name. They were all different. There was the top of the source of energy. And the demigods was the shark, the owl, the hawk, the pig. These was all demigods. So the families would have some ties to these particular animals or creatures that would be part of their family genealogy.
And what role did this portal play?
Very important role because they travel between earth time and spiritual time.
And is that now disrupted?
That means when you leave here as a god, then you go back to wherever you're from out there, and then you come back again. So that was the gateway to open the door.
And how is that functioning now?
Well, nobody practiced that art of the past. But for me to restore that place over here, that is the first thing that I will put back. And it has to be built at night, 2 hours before the full moon and 2 hours after the full moon.
Why is that the first thing?
Well, you're transferring energy in a spiritual manner. So there's a time frame for you to do such a thing. So you have to know all of that protocol on how to do it. The Kanakos was more into the land because the land is life. And part of the land is Kani. Kani is water. So without water, the land will never flourish. And what more can I say?
So speaking of that, we have the Owai system, right, that was created to ensure that there would be water wherever it was needed on the land. Can you speak a little bit about that system and its roots?
Yeah, the Owai system on this side of the island was where Waitau Reservoir is. That's man-made up there. So they try to capture the water. But the natives used to take the water off the mountain over there and all the way up to Mount Kaili. And they knew how to transfer the water and move them on top of the land. And on this south side, you're moving water over rocks. So they had a very unique way. And water only flows downhill. So to figure a wise system, you must figure out how the water will flow on rocks. And taking that mentality, and that's how you set the Owai up.
So how did they do it? What did they figure out?
Just let the water flow on the rocks, and you can tell where the water's going. It will show you the trail.
So let the water show you.
Yeah.
and how much of that system is still intact today?
Well, this side, they kind of destroyed everything as development started. So most of the Hawaiis throughout Kauai was destroyed by the plantation. And most of the heiaus, the plantations destroyed all of them.
The plantation, so people I talked to, they said, oh no, we're using the Hawaii system, we're preserving the Hawaii system. What would you say?
Whoever controls water controls growth. Okay. There's no such thing the guys using the water. Water should be flowing its natural flow. To have development, that's why you're taking water from here, from Wainiha, and making them come all the way to the south side. That's a lot of water.
And what about the dynamiting? Can you speak about that?
Okay. As development on the south side started, the developer does not really worry about the structural layout of the land and the value of why water moves in the tubes, lava tubes. As you dynamite the top, then you dynamite the flow of the water. So the flow of the water came in Kaneoloa. There was a well in there. There's a well in the fish pond, which then was called the Waiohai, and outside in the ocean. And when the two hurricanes came by, everybody wanted to know where we're getting our fresh water down. So you would dive down 20 feet, turn your water jug sidewards, let the air out, and the fresh water about 12 inches off the bottom of the ocean will fill up your water jug.
And that's still in place?
Like, it got destroyed when they started doing the dynamiting up here in about a year and a half ago. So everything on the bottom end got destroyed. But yeah, again, you know, you're playing politics with the county and the developer. Everything about Hawaii is money. So without money, the corruption continues. Because everybody wants to make money. And you can sell land that you don't own, knowing that a title and a warrant deed are two different land titles. Only in Hawaii that you have a warrant deed. There's no place in American history that they can show you a warrant deed is placed on the 49 states. Okay, Russia gave up Alaska, so there's a land transfer, so that's a title. So when the French gave up the Louisiana Purchase, that was another land transfer. And when the English gave up, like Washington State, Oregon, all around there, the English gave that up, same as on the East Coast. So that's how land was transferred. You cannot claim ownership of land, you know what? That's why I say to all of these Malahinis, which is a foreigner that comes here, they claim they have title. So I say, did you ever read your warrant deed? And they tell me no. I said, Section 9 and Section 10 is something that you should look at. And when they look at it, they have no questions, because they're a total stung that they don't know what they think they own. It's very critical on land. So if you keep the native person as a ward of the state, a ward of the state is a person that is less than 50%. And if you're 50 and above, then you really have no say in the political arena of Hawaii. But if you're 49% and below, then you become a stranger within your own household. Sad.
And that's what you see happening here.
It's going on right now. Every day. Every day a land that is sold, they can't ever prove ownership of the land because the warrant deed does not give you, there's a title break. The break never took place. But they make you believe the break took place as a resolution that transferred Hawaii to the United States. But when you check on the Justice Department, that's what I was trying to say earlier, it's the Justice Department and State Department that took down their web page about annexation because they have no documents that ever took place. And you should check it out.
I'm going to. Thank you. Tell me about Mahalapu, specifically that area, that land, and its significance to Hawaiians.
Okay, Mahalapu is an ancient battleground and a cemetery. Throughout Hawaii, this island, the common people would be buried in the sand dunes, and the alis would be buried in the mountain, in the caves. So it's the only difference between the ranking of its people.
And so what would we find if we were to do archaeological digs and so forth in Mahalapu?
Okay, like I said earlier, we're the only state that has more archaeology studies than any other state in the United States. Only in Hawaii. Because an archaeologist, they believe the blood quantum gives them the right to make a political decision based on development.
So for me, just to better understand the history and the culture, it sounds like that was a burial site, and there was a warrior, like you said, there was wars that took place there. What were some of the battles or wars that you know of?
Oh, when Kamehameha tried to invade this island, I re-interned 150 Ivi that came back from the Smithsonian. I did that with Atwood Makanani. And, you know, it's sad when you have to go and bring them back and put them to rest, because when once you leave this earth, you should be resting. Only in Hawaii, the state let that happen. There's no place in America that you can go over to a native reservation and go start digging up the land and start making your development. It only happens here because of the word reward. When you're a ward, it's based upon a blood quantum. So it really deprives your legal rights to protect your assets.
So Mahalapu became under the control of plantation?
Yeah, Mahalapu was, like I said earlier, it started off as the LAD Sugar Company, which the Native Hawaiians created.
Sorry, LAD, L-A-D.
Yeah, LAD. And from there, it came to the Koloa Sugar Mill. And then from the Koloa Sugar Mill, it became McBride. And then McBride became Grow Farm. So Grow Farm is controlled by our also Representative Case. That's his family's land that they swindle out of the Kanakas.
Can you describe how that happened?
Well, overthrowing the queen, a lot of things in Hawaii happened. And they were not prepared. The queen was very akamai not to fight in battle with the United States. So she said battle can be won with the push of the pen. So you're using energy and the push of the pen, because the people, the cabinet, the monarchy had, was very aware of the American imperialistic motives that it had in Hawaii or throughout Polynesia. Because whoever controls Hawaii, you control the world. Really, people don't look at it that way.
Controls the root?
The world.
The world.
Yeah.
Can you say more about that?
Sure. Whoever controls Hawaii controls the world, because this is the only place from the continent of America to the Asian continent. And whatever happens on the bottom half of the Pacific, you always have to come to Hawaii. Hawaii played a very interesting role in on its mission to let the word aloha spread. See, if we had the aloha now, we wouldn't have the turmoil that is happening out there in the real world. Because America is hiding the crime that it committed here. Because, you know, when George Bush invaded Iraq, Saddam Hussein, I seen that on C-SPAN, he told George Bush, as fast as you leave Hawaii, I will leave Kuwait just as fast. And even faster. And then the next day, America attacked Iraq. But I was amazed in my early days in the 70s. I used to play basketball with college kids in Honolulu at the UH. And I got to meet a lot of people from the Middle East. A lot of Lebanese was here. But they all came to study why Hawaii became part of America. But they were blown away that Hawaii was never part of America. So when the Lebanese war started, that was the last time I had contact with all of these people.
So you see this land grab system is still being perpetuated. How has that changed in the last 5-10 years?
First of all, cocoa palms should have never been built, period.
In Wailua.
In Wailua. Like Kauailani said, it was a sacred place to the people, but sacred to the Malahinis does not concern them because they're all about money. So the more you develop, the more money the foreigner makes, and the more suffering that the Kanaka has to live through. Because in 17 years from now, we'll never find a pure Hawaiian.
Say more about that, please.
Okay, I have a book, a DVD, Until There Was None. That would be very sad when you watch the DVD or read the book, because it describes the suffering of a country that became the 21st slave colony to America. Hawaii actually is a slave colony. Never thought about that, huh?
Okay. What would you like future generations to know specifically about this land, this heiau, mahalapui, okay, this land? And the traditions that we practice.
The future generation must always believe if you have a past, you'll have a future. In the present. So in the present that I walk the aina, I must give back to the aina so that the people that comes after I leave will have a place to see, like Kaneohe. When you restore your past, then you restore the spiritual energy that was once taken away, because the culture is very unique and very different from all cultures. The Indians come pretty close to the Hawaiian culture, but it is in their ranking among themselves, but it is also in their belief that the power is in the land and to the heavens. And Kanaka believes in the same mentality.
What exactly can the younger generations do? What should we be teaching them?
First of all, you teach the younger people to speak the language. The language is the grassroots of who you are in a culture. Because without the language, you will never know the meaning of all the sites that go around the island. And each site or each area, you must know what is there in the language, because it describes different types of energy or water that flows in that area. You know, the danger, all of that is in the language. But after you lose your language, you really don't understand the meaning of a lot of sites out there or a lot of areas of, you know, where the population lives. So language is the key. I was touched by the students that came here to visit this site a couple days ago. And it brought tears to my eyes when I heard them talking the language. It's because the language is your identity and the roots of your future.
And Malama the Aina, what else?
Language. Malama means you have to love the land. And by loving the land will always give back to you. It will never grumble with you, but it will share with you. That's what Malama is all about, caring for the land.
So we should be teaching farming practices, or how exactly? Because there's ways of farming the land.
Okay, for my role as the po'o, I have people below me that are qualified or educated to do those things. So, you know, the po'o is a person who has a broader vision on the whole thing that is taking place. So you cannot be taking the glory, like I said, you have to be a we. You cannot be one I. So I designate everything to everybody so that to make things among ourselves are very comfortable and it's much easier to communicate. So before I leave this earth, I like to set the foundation that this place will live on forever. Or else I would have never got involved with Billy to stand by him and make it happen.
And so are there people on your team that are specifically understanding of how to care for the water, the land, the farming techniques?
Yeah, first when we first got organized, I learned the system. When you're dealing with the state, you must train the people that you need to train to do their mission, like restoring the rock wall, building the house. So you send them out to get certified by the kapunas. So now they're all certified. It's just a matter of time for me to put everything together. And everything over here at Kaneoluma, if we never had this problem with the county, we would have been pretty far along our way. This place would have been almost 3/4 completed in the last 5 years. But I would have completed it in 3.5 years.
And what's your vision for the next 5-10 years?
Well, I hope I'm still around, first of all. But the foundation that we set and the people that follow you, give them a mission. Because in that mission, you have a vision of what you will do, not what I will do, but it's what you will do. Because the opportunity for you is to follow the blueprint of what we establish.
So if you're speaking right now to the next generation, the ones who are going to take over for you and your team, you're going to pass it to them. What is the things that you want to say to them?
I don't have to explain anything to them. Because if you're with me, you're a we, so you must figure out your role. Each person has a different role and a different skill in their involvement. So you let them share what they have with those that don't know what you know. So that's how the system works under me. Okay?
And final question. Thank you for being here so long. If there was a blessing that you wanted to offer to the land, to the people on the land, what would that be?
That's for you yourself, to Malama the Aina, and the gift that you give is from your heart.
Thank you very much for this gift. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to Land Stories on Talk Story Radio Kauai. Angela, are you with us? Angela, are you with us? Are you with us? Angela? Oh, good. Angela, are you on the air? Oh, I got it.
You got it?
Yeah. Welcome to live radio, everybody, as we're still learning how to use our own machines. Thank you so much for listening to Talk Story Radio today with Angela Zussman from Talk Story Radio and Story for All. We just heard Rupert Rowe from Kaneoluma He'iau down in the Poipu area speaking to us about cultural preservation and the importance of doing so. Angela, what have you got to say?
You know, that's one of the most profoundly moving interviews I've ever had the privilege of conducting. There were three other cultural practitioners present, and the energy was just so powerful. Listening to Uncle Rupert, there's just so much more to what he was saying than can be expressed in words. And I think I was, you know, sort of in silence for a couple of minutes after we concluded the interview, just taking all of it in. And again, just feeling so fortunate to be receiving his stories and his knowledge. So I hope some of that was conveyed over the radio waves today, but just such a breadth of topics that he covered, so much to think about and dig more deeply into.
Yes. I was interested in how he talked about you to learn the language as a way to transmit culture and feeling and knowledge and all of that. That was very lovely.
So for
Talk Story Radio, for Talk Story Radio, we're going to be airing on the last Friday of every month here at 9 to 11 in the former Kanikapila time slot. And so we have some more things planned. What have you got planned for the next couple sessions?
So I'm excited to continue to share some of these land stories interviews. In October, our last Friday session is going to be October 27th. Mm-hmm. So that'll be at 9 o'clock, and we'll be playing an interview with Daryl Kaneshiro, at Omao Homelands, Omao Ranchlands. So the Kaneshiro family has been farming here in Kauai for generations. You know, they have other things that they've been involved with, but it's going to be, I think, another lens into the cultural traditions around land management and farming from a non-native Hawaiian family. They have a Japanese origin, and you'll hear some of his origin story is really interesting, too. So I'm excited to be able to share that with you in October.
Fantastic. So you can always tune in here at KKCR via 91.9. Island-wide, 90.9 FM in Hanalei, 92.7 FM in Anahola and Moloa'a, and then 88.9 FM in Honolulu. You can also catch us on the KKCR app. That is, you can easily find at your app store and put on your phone and take us with you everywhere. For more information about land stories, you can go to storyforall.org. And you can learn all about the project and how interesting and how broad it is nationwide and everything. And is there anything else you would like to add with us today, Angela?
I just want to offer gratitude, first of all, to Hawaii Council for the Humanities and the support of the National Endowment for the Humanities. The Land Stories program has been supported by their funding. So thank you. To the Hawaii Council for the Humanities and support of the National Endowment for the Humanities. They're making so much great storytelling possible on the islands and nationally through the National Endowment for the Humanities. So we're very grateful for their support. I want to thank Uncle Rupert Rowe, for, you know, again, sharing his wisdom and his stories with us in this project. And I want to thank our cultural advisor and guide to the Land Stories Project, Kaolani Kahalakai. She has been an extraordinary support in identifying storytellers and helping to build an understanding, you know, about the depth of this topic and therefore who we need to talk to. So I wanted to thank her, as well as the rest of my team at Story for All.
Fantastic. Thank you so much once again for being with us today, Angela, and thank you, Talk Story Radio Kauai will air the last Friday of every month, and we will share stories about Kauai, land stories particularly, and we plan some live interviews and some pre-recorded interviews on these topics for the purpose of sharing what is on Kauai, for the purpose of healing the past and the future, and for transmitting knowledge. And that's what we're all about. Thank you very much, Angela.
Thank you, Annie. Thank you, everybody. Have a great rest of the day.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea.